across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. 7:06 on this Friday, the 13th of September, 2024. Nice to have you along. We've got our fine stable of Friday guests coming up for you. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. In a matter of minutes, Mark Jacob will help us break down media coverage of this week's presidential debate coming up at the bottom of the hour. And we will wrap things up with Dan Schumacher talking sports as the Packers get set for their home opener this weekend against Indianapolis. The Brewers' magic number drops down to 7, and the Badgers get set to host the Alabama Crimson Tide at Camp Randall 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. So a lot going on, and along the way, if you'd like to reach us by phone or by text, the number here is 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Brittany Merlot has been off this week, but she could not have picked a quieter weather week if I just said, Greg, every day, it's going to be sunny and warm, sunny and warm, sunny and warm, you know,
it's sunny like, and warm. It's like San Diego, 72 and sunny today. Tomorrow, yes. 72 and sunny. Next week, 72 and sunny.
Yes, I was able to break out the proper summer gear here. Well, one of my, what I like to call my dad shirts, just a green shirt with a bunch of little lawnmowers all over them. Just
you are so adorably a father.
I know. It's fun. It's been a good week weather-wise, and hopefully we'll catch up with Brittany early next week here. It's going to be a quiet weekend here, which it hasn't been for the longest time. We had the Democratic Convention. We had Labor Day weekend, our trip up to Canada. We've had family visiting. And at the moment, do you get those weekends sometimes where you know nothing's coming and you just anticipate the nothingness? You're just like, okay, nothing come up. Give me nothing.
So as we spoke about earlier in the show, in the at the beginning of the 6 o'clock hour, I co-own a club, and I'm usually working Fridays and Saturdays. Every once in a while, I get the weekends off, but I generally put a lot of that energy you're talking about into my Sundays, where it's like, okay, and we got nothing to do, and even when I have stuff to do around the house, it's still exciting because then I have this sense of fulfillment. But there is a great John Mulaney clip, I think, from New in Town, where he's talking about being an adult and just the pure serotonin of like, what are you doing today? What did you do this weekend? Nothing. I did nothing. Or when plans get canceled at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. The kids out there in, like, you know, 23 and younger, there will come a time where you'll be getting ready. You'll want to see your friends, but you want to stay home, and they call the last minute for whatever reason. And he's like, hey, I can't do it. And you're like,
oh, thank you. Thank you.
Never a better moment has been had by a human.
And at that point, just go ahead and sign up for the AARP magazine, because we're coming near the end when you get to that point. But you know what? It still feels really, really good.
They have Springsteen on the cover. It's cool.
Oh, there you go. That's right. That's right. They do. I was going to get to all the usual political stuff. Tim Walz is going to be in the Wausau area later today, and then he'll be in Superior tomorrow. I could get into more of that. I got so caught up during the news break in this article in the Washington Post. The headline sucked me in. A rumble echoed around the world for 9 days. Here's what caused it. It took 70 people from 15 different countries and more than 8,000 exchanged messages to crack the case. And so it starts to talk about a strange rumble in mid-September of last year on seismic stations all around the globe. And it continued for about 9 days or so. And they couldn't figure out what were all the instruments going kablooey. Was there a new volcano emerging somewhere on the planet? They referred to it as an unidentified seismic object because they couldn't. And I mean, this is stuff horror movies are made out of. Like, why is the earth rumbling and nobody can seem to figure this out? And eventually they cracked the mystery in a fjord in Greenland. And the answer has to deal with a changing climate and global warming. And you've seen the way that glaciers are melting and, mm-hmm. and disappearing and everything like that.
Yeah.
And in one particular fjord in Greenland on September 16th of last year, a glacier had finally thinned enough that it could no longer support about 500 feet of mountain rock above it. So this 500-foot thick piece, a third of a mile wide, a third of a mile long, fell into the fjord, triggered a massive landslide. Rock and ice, they say, enough to fill 10,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools, was moving at about 50 yards per second for more than a mile. It triggered in this fjord a tsunami 650 feet high. And thankfully, there were no ships in the area at the time. And then it basically just kind of sloshed back and forth in this fjord like water in a bathtub. But of course, because the wave was so huge, that's what they were hearing all this time, which that in and of itself is kind of interesting. Like they had to solve this mystery and they eventually found out what it was. But then you come back to the whole changing climate thing and realize, yeah, this time the 650-foot high tsunami was pretty much restricted to this fjord and some places a little bit farther down where there were areas that had never been touched by tsunamis before and suffered damage. This time it was there. But again, what's the next one going to do or the one after that?
Yes. You know? Yes. That is the constant question that scientists are asking and trying to figure out. I'm asking and freaking out because, you know, we're you know, tornado season's changing, hurricane season's changing, in the Canadian wildfire. It all goes back to this idea of climate change, and yet there are just people who are like, but what do we really know about it?
Well, and again, it took 9 days to figure this out. We'd like to think that, you know, we know everything instantaneously, that all the smart people out there could warn us if something's coming, like a tsunami, like an asteroid or whatever.
Oh,
and every so often we're reminded we actually don't know everything and we can still be surprised in not a good way.
No.
You know? So not to scare everybody, but just to
Happy Friday, to say, everybody.
Happy Friday the 13th, everybody. But just to say, there's still a lot of mysteries out there in the universe.
72 and sunny, and we're doomed. All right, have a good Friday, everybody.
Thankfully, there are things we can count on, like Rob in Tigerton saying, good morning from Tigerton. Hazy sun and 55 degrees. Mowed 5 yards in Tigerton yesterday. I loved Whitney Houston's singing of the national anthem during Super Bowl 25. Backdrop to the first Gulf War of 1991. Mm-hmm. I still get tears. Have a super weekend. Thank you, Rob. And the same to you as well. I remember that so well. And I believe, not that we're, you know, doing anything with the history books here, but I'm pretty sure that's the first song we've played front to back on our little talk show here in the morning.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it is still, you know, in my mind, the quintessential modern day version of the national anthem. And yes, Marvin Gaye had a version. Jimi Hendrix had a version. Drunk Girl singing at the Home Run Derby had her own version.
Roseanne.
So, yeah. It's like I said, it's not an easy song, but thank you, Rob. I still get chills when I hear it, which is why I wanted to share it again. Tony writes in on YouTube that he is excited for the Superior visit of vice presidential nominee Tim Walz. So again, he'll be landing first at the Central Wisconsin Airport in Mosinee around 3 o'clock this afternoon after he's done in Grand Rapids and Lansing, Michigan today. Holding an event in Wausau around 3:45 or so, but these things always run a little bit late. And then it's off to the airport in Duluth, come across the Blatnik Bridge to Superior, and hold a rally at UW-Superior tomorrow afternoon, which, if you're in Superior, you got to feel so good because we're a battleground state, and you're so used to Minnesota and Minnesota media markets getting all of the attention. And it is still the Duluth media market, but Superior, that's the voters that you want to reach. And so thankfully for the folks in Superior, they are going to get quite the big guest here. Are you laughing at a note that Jim Santel just sent over?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry, folks.
All right. I'm not. No, we could wait till 7:20, but Jim has a way of teasing us sometimes.
That's the beauty of this show. So for folks, we do a live stream. There's a chat between all the people in the show. And for the past few weeks, Jim Santel, who is a lovely human being, and listen to his show, Amicus, we'll be talking about something, and he'll be like, I've got court cases, I've got precedent, I've got things to talk about with the law, and it's just always wonderful.
There's always something, and the note that he sent was, in 1993, international litigation between Denmark and Norway disputed lands in eastern Greenland involved territories between a couple of different fjords whose names I can't pronounce. Jim Santel, good morning. You can find everything.
Good morning. Lawyers and courts are always involved in troubling things out there, including fjords. And apparently Carlsberg Fjord and the Bessel Fjord way back in the 1990s were subjects of some dispute between two countries. So there you have it. Much less significant, I suspect, than the change in our worldwide climate, but nonetheless, fjords animate our lives.
I think it's funny that between Iceland, Greenland, Denmark and Norway, we're fighting over this. And we sometimes forget that, you know, we think of these two big superpowers, the U.S. and Russia, or three, China. And we forget that, you know, for a time, it was like, you know, Denmark had kind of ran the world. Portugal, for a time, kind of ran the world, you know, because they had the ships and the willingness to explore the world. And we forget that, yeah, there were all kinds of little disputes about these places up north that, you know, just have some rocks and glaciers and a few unlucky, you know, sheep or something up there.
We also forget a time when the former president said, hey, I'll buy Greenland.
and that may or may not have included the fjords. We don't know. We don't know if that was involved in the package.
And what was the Ron Johnson one about Greenland or Iceland having the opposite name or something like that?
He's a treat.
Greenland is an icy place, and Iceland is a green place, and who knows? Who knows?
Who knows, indeed. What we're going to do is take a break here, and when we come back, Jim's going to talk to us about a couple of other legal cases in the news that you're going to want to hear about, including another delay in Donald Trump's sentencing. We'll have that coming up. The Brewers were winners in San Francisco. They took 2 out of 3, winning last night 3-0. Jackson Chourios, 2-run home run. Makes him a member of the 2020 club. 20 home runs, 20 stolen bases. At the age of 20. That's never been done before. So the Brewers now have a 9-game lead over Chicago. The magic number is 7. They're still 3 games behind the Dodgers to get a first-round bye. They're in Arizona starting tonight at 8:40. Back with Jim Santel and more after this on the Civic Media Radio Network here up north. So Jim Santel's show, Amicus, can be heard Saturday mornings at 9, replays on Sunday mornings across the Civic Media Radio Network. Learn more at civicmedia.us. Jim, nice to have you here as always. I'm sure you have another busy show planned for tomorrow.
Good to be with you as always on this Good Friday morning. And yes, lots of things to talk about, including not so much fjords, but international cases as well. Some things of great seriousness, including this this investigation in France involving an international platform and many other things overseas. So justice in other countries as well.
All right. We're going to get to a delay in Trump's sentencing in just a moment, but I want to come back to something I was talking to Kia Vakil about in our last hour, and that is the number of political things that wind up in the courts and the degree to which some judges and justices seem to let politics cloud their interpretation of the law more than others. And there's no right or wrong answer to this, Jim. I just want to get your thoughts on it. Because we were talking about how in South Carolina, a solidly Republican conservative state, conservative control of the state Supreme Court, they still read the rule, as I think it was intended to be read, in striking down voucher school public funding, saying, no, you can't spend public money on voucher schools. I'm sure it surprised a lot of people that this conservative Supreme Court did that. And then in North Dakota, a judge struck down an abortion ban there. And the North Dakota Supreme Court has in the past sided with people seeking to protect reproductive health rights. Again, not because they're not conservative, they most certainly are, but they were willing to, they were reading the law one way, contrast that with the way the Supreme Court justices are reading the law when it comes to something like presidential immunity. And again, all this is to say, Jim, I'm not saying there's a right or wrong answer, but we like to sometimes think of law as right versus wrong, but it is sometimes left versus right.
It certainly is, and we have seen that. We've talked about it on this broadcast coming from our Supreme Court and, frankly, other appeals courts. And your concept is spot on. You think about the concept of the rule of law, and we just throw that out there and we say, well, it means that justice is promoted. Well, it really is much more than that. It should be that it is the law. It is the fundamental notions about due process and substantive rights that should direct the results. That should rule the case. That should rule us in a very real way. And you do have an awful lot of good judges out there who do come from perspectives on one side or another, but can put those personal perspectives to one side and make the right decision, because the law in the end is what dictates and what compels the result. Witness, once again, on the other side, when that doesn't happen, not only do justices and judges let that intrude their own personal perspectives and priorities and partisanship infect their decisions, but it also sends this terrible message to America, big and small, all places across our great land, that the rule of law does not take precedence, and that it is all just about where you come from. Even this practice inside the media these days of identifying every single federal judge as being a Trump appointee, a Biden appointee, an Obama appointee, a Bush appointee, all of that labels them and suggests that their results are the product of their own views. Sometimes true, I'd like to think still most often not, but sometimes when it is true, it really changes the world. That's what the Supreme Court has been about recently.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think there. There was one who is like the example. I believe it was a George H.W. Bush appointee. Was it maybe David Souter, who turned out to be far more liberal than people were thinking when Bush appointed him?
Absolutely. David Souter is notable out there. The other one comes from our Seventh Circuit here is John Paul Stevens, appointed by Gerald Ford, and thought to be a very conservative person, gets on the bench and over time becomes this great bastion for liberal rights. The other thing we should note as we talk about the Supreme Court is there may be a little bit of hint. It's much too early to say, but Amy Coney Barrett is also exhibiting some signs of parting from her conservative group this past term as well, and saying, you know what, you're wrong about that. Departing from this notion of that history is the way that we interpret the Constitution. Indications that Amy Coney Barrett may also slowly but clearly moving aside from the notion of where she comes from in terms of political perspective and abiding by what she thinks the rule of law should be all about. Well, watch that in history.
I wasn't expecting to bring this up, but when you mentioned Justice Amy Coney Barrett, I just have to say she is not obligated to do anything about what I'm about to say. But there are folks saying for somebody who has her children are adopted from Haiti, and to hear what Donald Trump and J.D. Vance have been saying about Haitian migrants has been so racist and hateful. And again, Justice Barrett is not obligated to speak up, but there are people looking at her going, you would only have to say a word to maybe shame him into, again, it's not about being partisan. It's about not being just so racist, jumping to conclusions and spreading tropes like that.
Right. And, you know, she's got opportunities out there. All the justices do it. We don't want them out there commenting on cases, obviously. That's where we've gotten in trouble in the past.
Right.
But you do have these opportunities. Justices and judges are always invited to law schools, hopefully other nonpartisan events. And she could certainly, as they often do, talk about their own families, how compelling it would be without identifying anything about this dispute in politics, about immigrants and illegal aliens, as one of our candidates describes them, all those kinds of things, simply to talk about your own family and where they come from and who they are. And without saying anything, drawing the lines, all the rest of us can draw the lines and make the conclusions about the description that she could give.
Exactly. All right, let's get to Trump and sentencing on the 34 criminal counts, which, you know, he was found guilty of back in May. And there are folks that wanted to see sentencing done right away. But last Friday, since our last visit, Judge Juan Merchan rescheduled sentencing for November 26th, citing the, quote, unique time frame this matter currently finds itself in, instead of September 18th, as he had previously said. He says, this matter is one that stands alone in a unique place in this nation's history, to which I would again come back to my claim, no, it's not. Until you are sworn into office, you are a citizen like anybody else. You have no special place above the law. Jim, I know it's more of a comment than a question. I still see no reason. He was only going to get probation anyway. I see no reason that probation couldn't have been handed down in May and we'd be done with this.
I could not agree more. And we put this in the context of what we did talk about last week because it had already happened. That is Tanya Chutkan, the federal case, going in just the opposite direction. And she's saying, no, there's nothing about the proceedings in the federal interference case that are going to be impacted in my court, she says, by politics and what's going on out there. One day later, again, shortly after we were done with your broadcast this last Friday, Merchan goes in just the opposite direction. Recall as well, this is a defendant who already got a three-week delay in the trial way back when. He was found guilty 4 months ago, And the reason why all this has been postponed again until this time when Judge Merchan identifies this difficult time in American history is because Donald Trump legitimately raised the issue of whether or not immunity prevents this thing from going ahead. And the answer to that, and this is the reason why I would be equally critical of Juan Merchan, is that question can be resolved in three paragraphs, maybe even two paragraphs, and could have been done at any time in August, in July, and we still don't have a decision from him. And now he says, well, gee, it's too late. The election is coming up. We've got to postpone it. And it does also send the message once again for all Americans about the differences in the ways the defendants are treated.
Very much so. Jim Santel, hear him tomorrow morning at 9. Thank you, Jim. Back with Mark Jacob next. You're up north.
Unchain my heart. Unchain my heart. Baby, let me be. Unchain my heart. Unchain my heart. Cause you don't care about me.
On the anniversary of Ray Charles' birth, we're back on Up North News Radio, 7:34 right now. And on this Friday morning, once again, we bring in our friend Mark Jacob from Chicago to talk about media coverage of the week's events, which, of course, tops with a presidential debate. Mark, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good, good. And as always, you can get his Stop the Presses newsletter over at stopthepresses.news. And somewhere in here, I put it up on screen every week for our folks to see. And this is the week that I can't find it. There it is. Because then I can also mention your video series with Stephen Beschloss, Media Misses. What are you guys tackling this week?
Well, we talked about this kind of obsession with undecided voters. And the New York Times wrote kind of a crazy story that in which they interviewed 8 supposedly undecided voters. And Pat, I think you have to wonder if anyone's really undecided at the moment. That the real play in our politics is whether how passionate people are and how determined they are to vote. I think that's what's really still at play, and it has changed dramatically in the last couple months since Biden got out of the race. But undecided voters. Okay, so the New York Times writes this story that says, well, we talked to 8 undecided voters, and they told us they wanted more of the fine print, you know, which is the suggestion that people who are just lightly engaged with the news really want to read position papers on the over long-term impact of the child tax credit.
So
it just was kind of stupid, a stupid story by the New York Times, and we wrote it that way, that they were kind of fetishizing this idea of undecideds. And, you know, I don't know if you recall a couple of weeks ago that CNN had an undecided voter who was really not undecided, you know, and
had voted for Trump twice.
Out had been writing pro-Trump stuff on his social media for years, and the CNN either knew it and didn't do anything about it or didn't know about it.
So here's the thing. They, instead of, again, talking to quote-unquote undecided voters to see, you know, what positions would sway them, do stories about the positions. And again, Kamala Harris is not a blank slate. She's been vice president for 4 years. And so anything that she does is going to most likely be a variation of what the Biden-Harris administration has been doing for the past 4 years. And yet the New York Times, even after it was so clear that Vice President Harris dominated that debate and that Donald Trump looked like a petulant, angry little racist, the front page the next day was, as a Rolling Stone writer, Tim Dickinson, put it, completely filtered through the lens of Trump. The photo on the front page was Trump. The first headline says, "Trump says he had a great debate. His allies privately say otherwise." The next one, "How Trump uses vitriol for migrants to sideline other issues." And then the next headline, "During the debate, Donald Trump used a false charge to attack Kamala Harris for her support of abortion rights." And again, it's just like, it's like he's still president, or that they just can't quit framing the news through him.
Yeah, actually, you know, even the ABC people called him President Trump, you know, when he's not anymore. I just feel like the one thing, though, Pat, that's all true, but there has been a little bit of a breakthrough, I hope. There in two ways. The New York Times finally, in my Associated Press's newsletter, I've been begging them to do this. They finally wrote a story that in the headline said that Trump there were questions raised about him being too old and, you know, out of touch and unhinged and all that. They actually wrote a story with that in the headline instead of in the 18th paragraph. So that was good. Also, the ABC people, you know, pushing back on complete lies by Trump and actually fact-checking, which is something that the CNN people didn't do in the last debate. I mean, that's another thing I've been just saying. Real-time fact-checking is what you need to do. I mean, you know, CNN has their expert, who's really good, Daniel Dale, but they would have him on like a, you know, 45 minutes or an hour and a half after the debate. And that's too late. I mean, you got to do it like within seconds of somebody lying about something, or it doesn't, or the lie sticks. And, you know, this dogs and cats thing did not, I mean, it's not like that was a questionable. Well, I don't know if it's true or not. The authorities in the town said there's no evidence of it. And it's been tracked back to, you know, to complete like neo-Nazis in the area,
right,
on a Facebook post that had no basis in fact.
No. I will say, at the risk of sounding like the bad guy here, that the fact-checking was better. It was clearly better than what CNN did. But I think Daniel Dale identified 33 obvious lies, and he got fact-checked in real time on like three of them. There was almost never a muting of the microphone. And if there was, it was only for a second, because mostly it was David Muir would allow Trump to, you know, just jump in again and again. And one person who charted it looked at the 15 different questions or the 15 different topics that came up, and who got the first word and who got the last word. Well, who got the first word? Donald Trump 8 times, Kamala Harris 7 times. So even, roughly. Who got the last word in? On all 15 topics, Trump would bully his way in. And again, most of the time it was David Muir. We just let him go. He did fact check him. He did do a better job. But David Muir was getting me so frustrated that he would not just shut that down and say, no, we're moving on.
Right. I mean, and Trump got 5 more minutes in the debate. But the thing about that, Pat, is in the situation we're in now, him getting more minutes, it actually benefits Harris. Because he's saying such crazy things, you know. I mean, he's just so out of it, and it's just so frustrating to see that the polls are actually still anywhere near close, and they are. And anyone who supports a rational, normal government in our country needs to be working hard right now to stop Trump from kind of stealing an election or just not necessarily even stealing it. I mean, he could win it outright in a vote of the people, which would be just really frightening and just depressing. So people need to be serious about this. But it is really true that he's just saying more and more, you know, bonkers things. You know, now he's having Laura Loomer is flying around with him. I mean, Laura Loomer, who's like urging Kellyanne Conway and George Conway's, you know, daughter to commit suicide. I mean, who has said, you know, who has said that Islam is, you know, is an evil religion, who has said, you know, who said 9/11 was an inside job. And Trump took her to the 9/11 event this week. So he's gotten even worse. And it's not like he was good in the first place. He's been terrible and he's getting more terrible. And so just people need to wake up and really do something about it. And the news media need to keep up with what I said before, you know, that one New York Times story that says people are worried about, you know, Trump's behavior. They need to keep on writing those stories. They sure as heck wrote those stories about Joe Biden being old. They couldn't stop writing those stories about Joe Biden being old. So they need to be writing stories about all these troubling things that are going on with Trump and his campaign.
The thing that he tried to do when he was getting fact-checked was basically the Kellyanne Conway alternative facts. And so that when he was fact-checked, he would say, well, somebody saw it on TV or somebody said it on TV. So when the city manager said that there's not pets being eaten, he dismissed the city manager. When they talked about crime data and he claimed the FBI's crime data was wrong. You know, if you don't have some kind of standards, then you if you have no benchmark for facts,
right,
then you can get away with anything. So if the FBI is wrong, if the city manager is wrong, if all these people are wrong because you say they are, I don't know why anybody would believe them. And clearly 46% or so of the population does believe him. But there has to be a standard out there. And so good on the moderators for actually citing an authority figure. FBI stats, city manager, no state laws about ninth month, you know, post-birth abortion / executions. You got to have that standard, and journalists have to remember to keep measuring against that, not just he said this, because his standard might be, well, he heard somebody say it on TV.
Right. This whole, I saw it on the internet stuff is not good enough. And you're right that I think we need to be teaching kids this more. You know, we need to be teaching them. This is a real thing. This is not a real thing. This is how you assess facts. People really will try to lie to you. I mean, we need this. Even journalists, Pat, you know this, that there are some journalists who think this because someone said it, it must be true. And which is frightening. I mean, because they need to, what about the first sentences in the first day of journalism school needs to be, people will lie to you. You need to understand people will lie to you and you can't trust people. You have to look at the facts. And I mean, that's just so important. You can't have a democracy if you don't have any shared facts. Right. And the right wing is trying to destroy the idea of shared facts.
And there's nothing wrong when the situation calls for it, for saying, now it could be this or it could be that.
Totally.
And you get more credibility for that if you abide by the fact that sometimes there are things that are just facts.
Right.
And that gets me to an area I want to ask you about, economic reporting. Donald Trump, you know, the old saying is, you know, when all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And all Donald Trump has is tariffs, 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 tariffs. And he keeps saying incorrectly that tariffs are a tax on foreign companies and that we will be awash with cash that can solve all of our problems, when tariffs are actually paid by the consumer at the end of this whole chain. And I still don't feel like that has been explained enough to people. But you can speak to the challenge of news outlets that don't have an economics reporter. And so it's general assignment reporters that have to do a little bit of economic reporting. It's not easy, but it still has to be done somehow.
No, it can be confounding. It's what you said earlier. There are some situations in which some facts say one thing, some facts say another. You know, I mean, the whole coffee is good for you or coffee is bad for you thing has been going on, you know, forever. And so it can be confounding, but that's where, instead of like quoting some politician on the internet, you need to, like, you know, go to your local college, find an economics professor, interview them. I mean, this tariffs thing is not like, that's not like a big debate. Every economics professor knows that. They know, I mean, if it was this magic formula that Trump is saying it is, then people would have done it already. And it's not like this magic money thing. It's clearly tariffs fuel inflation because they raise prices for consumers. And if you can't see that, I mean, and here's the thing, Pat, he's going to keep on lying about that over and over again. You know what that means? That means that the legitimate news media need to keep on telling the truth over and over again. This is we're in this situation where just saying something once isn't enough for the news media. They need to be warriors for the truth. They need to be telling people, they need to be combating lies. That it's not just, you know, we're going to do your own thing. And we said it once 3 weeks ago. That's not good enough. If the lie is still out there and it's still getting purchased with people, you need to fight against it. That's the job of the media to let the truth break through.
Yes, I think, and I've said this before, but I want to say it again, that journalists are finally learning what people learned in politics. And as somebody who has, you know, crossed that line both ways, I had to learn this as well, that in politics, and if you watch, you know, say a Joe Biden speech or whatever, you start to hear the same thing over and over again. There's a reason for that. It's only after you get sick of hearing yourself say it that the audience is just starting to pay attention to what you're saying. And the same goes with news media. They've like, oh, well, we debunked it once. That's debunking something once is not going to do. You've got to come at the truth and explain the truth over and over again until it finally sinks in on folks.
Right. You know, you saw where Fox was like, it was criticizing Harris for saying the same thing at different speeches. She said the same thing yesterday and the day before. That's called a stump speech. That's what politicians do. And for like, it was that goofy, you know, box of wine lady on Fox who was like complaining about that. It's called a stump speech. You say it because that's what you really believe and you want that to break through with your audience.
Oh, God. Well, again, thank God for Saturday Night Live and the ability to do parody because they give us so much material to work with. For all of this and much more, you can get Mark Jacobs' newsletter, Stop the Presses, at stopthepresses.news, his video series with Stephen Beschloss, Media Misses, and he does plenty for us at Courier Newsroom. Go to couriernewsroom.com. Thanks so much, as always, Mark. Appreciate it. Have a wonderful weekend.
Have a good weekend, Pat.
All right. When we come back, Dan Schumacher is going to join us, and we're going to talk a little sports, Brewers' magic number, Packers' home opener, and more. Right after this, you're up north. In which we get together on Friday mornings, and Greg Bach and Dan Schumacher try to explain to me yet again that I'm getting all my Grateful Dead songs wrong. And if I would just listen to them more often, I would get these songs right. Greg, who are we hearing? What are we hearing today?
We're listening to Franklin's Tower this morning.
Okay. And Dan has a story about every song. What stadium he heard it in.
Oh, yeah.
Whether he was, you know, selling bologna sandwiches out of the trunk of his car to concert goers or whatever the case may be. So every song has a story with you, doesn't it?
I used to keep my ticket stubs back there when we actually had ticket stubs. Mm-hmm. And I used to always go to the golf course by my house and rob for those little tiny pencils.
Yeah.
And take a handful of them on the road because then I could fit the little tiny pencil in my shorts or wherever and it wasn't too cumbersome. So I could write the song down on the back of the ticket.
I also feel like I feel like Franklin's Tower is the quintessential Dead song. Just like it's the way it starts, it's just. Yeah.
It has that groove. It just has that steady groove. Yep. And it's much better live, of course. That's a studio album. It's much better live.
All right. Hi to you, Sherry. Sherry and Horicon texts on the text line through WAUK. Hi, friends. And yes, we've got friends back together. And you got to see some old friends. Again, we'll get to the Brewers' magic number is 7 to clinch the division. Packers' home opener is Sunday against Indianapolis. But you are back at your old stomping grounds, UW-Eau Claire, for the opening of the Sonitag Center complex. And complex is putting it mildly. This thing is a massive beast. It is a brand new showcase for events, especially sports events in Eau Claire.
Yep. It's the 8th largest indoor facility in the country right now. It's 300,000. It's a 120-yard indoor with artificial turf and an 80-foot ceiling. You can kick, you can throw, you can play softball games in there. And the story behind it is that, you know, I argued for months, almost a full year, about they only wanted to put in a 60-yard field house in 50-foot ceiling. And I said, that's, for lack of better terms, it's like kissing your sister. That's not going to do much for you. And I argued with Mr. Sonnetag, and he understood me, and he then pennied up and made it so it became the eighth largest one. Largest one in college football right now, too. So that's wow. all divisions. Yeah, but we fundraise for it. So, Pat, I'll take a little shot at the mothership. Mr. McIntosh, is the AD down there, is seeking public funding for his field house, while we raised ours, which was in the tune of about $120 million.
Dang!
Wow. See, now, and that's – I know how busy that had kept you for mm-hmm. years mm-hmm. doing all of this.
Yeah. It was great, though, but I got a warm reception. I posted some things on my Facebook page on videos, and then ended the night with my children being around me, making it extremely rewarding. And
because there was a concert event to kick it off last night.
Yep. So it's not only was it an indoor field house, but then next to it, we built a 5,000 seat brand new basketball arena. And so Chris Young opened the place up to a sellout crowd. I was in the front row. He played great. You know, I know some of his songs, especially Famous Friends, I think is one of the best anthem songs there is for country. And mm-hmm. My kids had a great time. And ironically, at the end of the show, the last song, which was Famous Friends, Chris Young threw me his guitar pick.
And I've got look pick, at you.
And I've got the guitar pick online right now. And yeah, it was a good day. It was a good day. Better than most.
Well, like I said, I've known for years the work that you and others were mm-hmm. putting in on that. So it's nice to have that done. Now we've got to visit the NFL season, which I have to admit has not really started for me. I did see the Packer game Friday night in Brazil, and what a debacle that was, in my mm-hmm. opinion. But I was driving all day Sunday, so I didn't tune into any of the other games. And so in my mind, that was almost like the Packers' last preseason game, and football season really gets going this weekend. And the thing I hear about your Bears is, well, once again, for the 18th time in 18 years, your new quarterback is the second coming. But even though he did next to nothing last week, he's still being called the hero for the Bears being 1-0. Dan, how long is this honeymoon going to last?
Well, it's going to be a couple weeks probably, but that's the way it usually is, you know. And then everybody starts screaming for the second string quarterback. So. I will tell you, though, on, you know, talking about quarterbacks, I don't know if you saw last night, Tua, the AD or the quarterback for Miami Dolphins, got yeah. hurt again, another concussion. It looked like a bad concussion.
He can't.
And I would imagine that was his last football play.
It's got to be.
I'm just speculating.
Who is this? I'm sorry, I didn't hear it. Who was that?
Tua, I can't get his name. Tagovailoa.
Yeah, played at Alabama, number one draft pick. Plays for Miami. He was out last year for a bunch of games because of concussion and protocol, but he got knocked out silly last night. With how many concussions he's had and the severity of them, I just wonder if they're ever going to clear him. But then again, they cleared a guy who had a heart attack on a field. So the NFL is the NFL. So
I can't see that happening again because, I mean, anything happens to that man moving forward is going to set the NFL back. I feel like they just got over, whether they should or not, they mm-hmm. just got over years of bad press about mm-hmm. concussions and things, and we just haven't heard that much about it quite recently. And now it's all going to come back.
If you notice lately, Pat, they are really pushing hard. And I was at a presentation by the representatives of the Minnesota Vikings about a month ago with the rest of my league that I'm in. The NFL is going to be is funding high school flag football.
Yes.
And you're seeing a lot of advertisements by the NFL pushing that sport, both on men and a women's team. So you have two different teams. And it's all because of the bad press, and kids are not playing football at the numbers that they used to. And, the NFL's even allowed you to wear your guard over your helmet. So most college football programs, you have your helmet, and then they put this big soft pad, lily pad on the top of it to create absorption of contact. The NFL this year allows them, or college football now allows them to wear it during games when it was not allowed before.
Okay.
For so hey, whatever. A lot of changes in the game.
But whatever keeps it safe. Exactly. Brewers are in Arizona tonight to start a series, home on Monday against Philly, trying to get one of those first two spots in order to get a first round bye in the playoffs. What are your thoughts on Alabama coming to Camp Randall tomorrow?
it's going to be one hell of a tailgate party. I'm not kidding you. I mean, Alabama does it. Alabama fans do it right, and Scotty fans do it right. So, God, putting the two Reds together.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my
okay.
God.
I guess I'll be watching the pregame. That should be fun. The game itself, who knows? All right, Dan Schumacher, thank you so much. Glad you had a good time at the opening, and we'll see you over the weekend.
Take care, guys.
All right, Mr. Bach is back at 10 o'clock for Matt and Air on Air.
Yes,
anything fun to tell us about?
Got Dan Schaefer at 10:33 from the Recombobulation area, as well as our political editor now at Civic Media. And at 11:33, EAA talks about the Young Eagles program. We got two people here talking about that.
All right, and thanks to all of you for joining us here. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you back here Monday morning up north.